Enme Juku Kanangyo. Absorbing world sounds awakens a Buddha right here. This Buddha, the source of compassion, this Buddha receives only compassion. So thus the pure heart always rejoices. This is quite a challenging sutra. It's actually a sutra I've been practicing with, obviously for many years, in the sense of we encounter it in just about every sutra service, but also with more intensity over the last week or so. Probably like everyone here, my heart has been quite touched by the shootings in New Zealand, and by the shootings historically in our country. It seems that it's not, for me anyway, I don't find myself getting numb to them. I find it that with each shooting, I recall the others that came before. And so for me, each time this happens, there is a kind of set of recollections and sadness and anger. Questioning about what can be done. Of course, it has always been true that this hate has existed in the world. Hatred is a long enduring, as kind of dehumanizing othering. And I don't know if there's been progress in the world. I can't really say, but certainly I can look back and I feel that some of the things we saw historically seem quite horrible, like slavery. And, you know, the Holocaust, and we look at these things and we say, maybe we are on a trajectory toward some kind of healing. But then again, we also see that there are more recent genocides. We don't have to go back too far, where places have been abandoned in the midst of turmoil. We can think of Rwanda. And the world walked away. So the never again seems to ring somewhat hollow. And of course, we have this emergence of nationalism and white nationalism in the United States. And now we see that, of course, manifesting in the world. And it is very hard, very, very painful. Of course, I would sometimes like for practice to be this possibility of just somehow rising above into some nirvana land where my heart is untouched by these occurrences in the world. But this division and othering, it's everywhere. And it manifests in our own hearts too. We are susceptible. One of the phrases that has been somewhat helpful for me has been a phrase, yes and. The world is suffering. The world is on fire. And this morning, the sunlight shone down on the world, melting the snow. And this may sound like just some sort of stupid denial or band-aid, but it's not a no and. It's not no but, it's a yes and. Yes, this world is hurting. And the stars shine. And there is something really important about that in this practice for me, because it brings me into things as they are in the moment. We sit here together, happy band of practitioners, having found one another, practicing being with ourselves and with the world just as it is. And we find one another. We find the breath, we find the body, we find the occasional mourning dove outside singing its song. And it's quite a medicine to be in touch with things as they are, and to allow the world as it is to step forth and touch the heart. There is some container here, container for the unfolding narrative of the world. Yes, and there are also the beautiful stories in the world. There is not just tragedy. This week I read again the story. I first came across it a few years ago, but again came across the story of a man who started a group called Life After Hate. And I was quite touched by his work. He himself had been part of a white supremacist group that advocated violence. And he eventually woke to the suffering in his own heart and realized that this was not, in fact, healing. And stepped out of this way of life, this indoctrinating belief system that turns others, that dehumanizes others. And instead began working with people who were also trying to free themselves from this hatred that has possessed their hearts. He talks about this work as having to come from a place of compassion for it to be transformative. And I think that is really the Bodhisattva vow. That is hard work. It is hard to meet someone who with whom we so vehemently disagree, to meet them with compassion. But he says that in meeting with someone and allowing them to actually express the pain that underlies this hatred, that some of these people do, in fact, release. They see in him a different way of holding human presence. They learn from him, through his compassion with them, how to be compassionate with themselves and with others. And he has seen hundreds of people leave the path of white supremacy through these encounters over the years. That's quite a remarkable thing. And of course, the challenge in the mind is that it is not possible, necessary, or good to meet hatred with compassion. Because that sounds like agreement. I do not support white supremacy. And it is, in fact, hard for me to imagine meeting white supremacists with compassion. But I want to tell you a little story. A story about meeting a student. I have a student this year in school. For him, the hatred comes in a different form. He doesn't seem so much to be a white supremacist to me, but he is seriously homophobic and judgmental around sexuality. And he, in fact, talks, he has stated explicitly that he would like to harm, physically harm, anyone who, people who are gay or transgender. This young man is actually on probation now. He's has been to court because he threatened a transgender person at my high school. So he is not only saying these things, he is ready to walk the walk. He is one of my students. I meet him every day. And earlier this year, we were reading a book called Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe. And it's a story of two young men who are friends who, well, I guess I'll give away the end. For those of you who are listening, perhaps you could skip the next 20 seconds on the recording. They fall in love, these two characters. So the story raised all kinds of issues for my student, and he said many, many hateful things. And each time he did, I found myself meeting him not with compassion, but with the mind of right and wrong. The mind of right and wrong came first and declared that what he was saying was wrong and argued why. And I found that he would get more extreme in his anger in response. He grew more defensive. And I realized that it was not working. And I referred him to housemaster, counselor, parents, etc. I escalated. And nothing was working. On the contrary, my experience was that he was more and more firm in his resolve. One day he came in and he said that the situation was that he said that if a man ever came on to him in any way, or a boy, you know, ever came on to him in any way, I think his exact words were that he would kick him in the face. And of course, there arose in me the instantaneous mind of right and wrong, and I did not act on that. Instead, I turned toward him and I actually saw him for a moment. And something in me opened up. It's hard to explain, but I just saw him. And I saw the anger there and some level of mask. And I turned to him and I said, "Tell me why." And I think that he could see that I was genuinely curious, that somehow I had gotten past my judgments and that I was seeing him. And he didn't know. He actually couldn't really answer. And he offered a series of reasons until eventually he said, "Well, the Bible says so." And I said, "The Bible says that we should kick people in the face?" And he just kind of looked. And other students started to speak to him, who who previously, this had been a tough group, who previously had been sort of laughing along with him, maybe not knowing what to do, but kind of laughing along, this time they turned toward him and they said, "Yeah, this doesn't seem right to me." And they started to challenge him a bit, and I could see him soften. This was a number of months ago. He has been much less aggressive since this conversation. It was something that changed his behavior after that. I don't know for sure whether it changed his heart, but it did change his behavior. They did a study recently about people canvassing in Florida, door to door. And they were comparing two forms of canvassing to try to convince people about a particular political viewpoint. And actually, it was a view of tolerance, essentially, a view of tolerating. And in one group went around and the traditional fashion just tried to present a case. The other group went and said, "So how do you feel about this issue?" And they listened first for a while and really tried to understand, and then offered a response. And often in the transcripts, they read that the responses were shorter than the listening time. And they said that after these conversations, more people were convinced that tolerance was the right thing to do. And they said that they surveyed these people months afterward and that those opinions held. This is quite unusual in this type of work, quite unusual. And it dawned on me that not only is the teaching, the Dharma, compassion for the sake of our own hearts, it is perhaps the teaching also because it is a skillful means. It is a way of meeting people that allows people the space to transform. And I think the key is that it does not mean abandoning our own views or perspectives, but it also means, it's a yes and, it means also meeting people as they are. I find this to be, as I've said, a challenging teaching. And I think that one can spend too much of one's energy focusing on the attacker and not enough energy focusing on the victim. It is very, very important for us to attend to the victims of hate in the world and to show our love and support. And we see in New Zealand these this strong, loving, compassionate response, thousands of people coming out for prayers with the Muslim community. And to me, that was very touching to see that, quite a remarkable show of love and support. Yes, and I do wonder about how we can heal our world. And I guess this comes back to ourselves. It's less clear to me that we are able to heal the world and the divisions that arise in the mind if we remain firmly divided inside of ourselves. And if we are unable to meet one another with compassion, despite different views. So back to this line. This Buddha receives only compassion. The boundless. Compassion for our own view, yes. And not abandoning our own particular views of right and wrong. This is the precepts. We are never encouraged in Buddhist practice to abandon our precepts. And Compassion for one another. Compassion for the victims of crimes. Compassion that makes us weep. We think of Avalokiteshvara beholding the cries of the world with tears running down her face. And also compassion for the hater, for the one committing the crime. How else does one transform hate but through love? And finally, compassion for ourselves. We are in a world that is filled with so much divisiveness. We can allow the songbird outside to be here to console us with its beautiful song. Even as we too weep. The world is still here, holding us in its beauty.